Hi dolls, let me ask you a question. When you think of aesthetics, how does it make you feel? Are you confused, overwhelmed, or even unsure of where to start and which treatment is going to be best for you? Welcome to my brand new podcast, Fresh Not False, where we are going to be talking about how we can help you navigate the world of skin, beauty, and aesthetics. My name is Emma Harvey, and I'm here to help you understand more about our fabulous industry. Jasmine, if you could start telling our listeners a little bit about your background, that would be wonderful, and how you got into aesthetics.
Yeah, so I'm a dentist by background. I don't actually practice dentistry anymore, but I am a dentist. And I got into aesthetics about 4 years ago. And to be honest, I didn't get into it thinking that this was going to be my career or it's even going to take up a majority of my practice. I remember I was working at a practice in Southeast London, and the practice wasn't doing very well. And I thought, okay, why don't I increase my repertoire and what I can offer to patients and consider something different and potentially bring this on so that there's more availability to the patients there. Went on the course, and I can't say that I really liked aesthetics when I first started doing it. When you start to do anything new and you don't really know exactly what you're doing and you feel very underconfident, I went from knowing something very well, dentistry, to suddenly doing something that I don't really know that well, that I'm not that good at, because you can't be good at a practical skill without practice, right? So I started doing it, and one of the practice managers at the dental practice, I remember she put it on her Facebook that one of the dentists is starting aesthetics and she needs models. And then suddenly I had this flurry of people coming for me to almost practice on. And the more I was doing it, the more I was enjoying it. But I think I was quite lucky, because right after doing that course, I saw a lot of patients. And I think this is the problem with some practitioners, is that they start off and they don't really practice, right? And so they lose their confidence. And this is a skill that requires time and practice. And the more I did it, suddenly I started to realize, wait a second, I really like this, not just because of the actual work I was doing, but the patient relationship. So different to dentistry. Right? With dentistry, people are coming in with a very negative outlook. They're already coming in defensive. They're not happy that they're coming in for treatment. Whereas with this, even though I would deem this as being more painful than any dental procedure, people are coming in excited. Right? They're coming in really positive. They're excited that suddenly something that's bothered them is going to be improved. And I could really feel that shift anytime I was doing dentistry compared to when I was doing aesthetics. I was loving that. And the more I was doing it and the busier I was getting, I just found myself not really wanting to do dentistry as much, because I really loved that patient, that client interaction I was having. So bit by bit, I'd find myself drifting more towards aesthetics. And then within a very short period, I'd say within about a year, I switched completely from doing dentistry to doing solely aesthetics. And then I was also at the same time, I knew I wanted to better my skill. I didn't want to rely on sort of basic knowledge. So I started the level 7 in aesthetics, just so that I can gain as much knowledge as possible, because I wanted to be the safest possible practitioner. For me, that's my number one priority. I will never, ever do something that could possibly harm a patient or do something where I don't have the knowledge to sort of back up what I'm doing. So yeah, so that's what my background is.
And you have just completely flourished. And I found you on Instagram, and I remember seeing your work and being like, I never need to go to anyone else. This is the person who's going to work on my face forever now. And I've been really happy with the work. And I even remember from that first interaction of meeting you, because I'd been elsewhere to have my lips done and they hadn't explained any of the process and just basically said, you need them dissolved, I won't work on them, and didn't give me any other background. And I remember I came to you, and sometimes there's not so much bedside manner in the industry. And you really took care of me from day one, and you explained why we were going to dissolve and how much better it was going to look. And you actually showed me what needed to be dissolved. And so when it came time to do that process, I was fully confident, because it's that mental block, isn't it? Of like, right, well, I don't care that my lips may have migrated or looks lumpy, because it's better than having thin lips. So that whole journey of actually talking me through you might have thin lips again for a little bit, but then when we do refill them, you're going to have such a better shape. It made me so confident. And I can say it is the best advice I've ever been given. And I'm very happy with them now. And I always look and think that with clients. I think, oh, your fill is migrated. You need to go to Dr. Jasmine and get her to, to redo them.
You know, Ella, I think that what's so interesting is that aesthetics, the field of aesthetics, it's such a unique field because it combines both artistry, science, and business. And there are very few industries that have those three in combination. And I think the issue and the failure in this industry is that some practitioners focus on one of those three. They either just focus on the artistry and they don't have that bedside manner, or they don't understand the science behind what they're doing, or they see it as solely a business. And really the only way to be successful in this industry is to combine all of these things to deliver the best possible care to your patient. So I do think it's such a unique field. And for any patient, they don't just want good results. They want someone to look after them, right? They want someone that when they're going through this very sort of anxiety-driven process, because it is scary getting anything done to your face, the change, the needles, the pain, they want someone to look after them and to explain what's going on and to be there for them when things not just are going well, but when things go wrong, because things do go wrong. This isn't an exact science. Sometimes the body reacts in a way that we can't predict. So I think a good practitioner is someone who can literally be there for that patient from the very start of the patient journey to the very end, rather than thinking of this as kind of like a factory line where you just bang people in and out, which we see a lot of people in the industry seeing patients like this just as a number. And that's something that I will always remind myself of, that this might be, you know, the thousandth time I've done this procedure, but this is the first time someone's doing that, right? So you have to treat each patient as if this is the first person you've ever treated with that sort of care and attention.
And that comes across so much in your practice. And it's also, as a business owner, that confidence that I know if somebody comes in to see me and I recommend them to you, I know that you are going to give that whole journey and experience from start to finish. And I think the point that you touched on there about bringing three different sectors together and making sure that you do your best with all of them is something that a lot of places aren't doing. And you've hit that nail on the head and the results on top, because it doesn't matter where you go, what name you go to, if they're the best at what they do. As a patient, if you're not feeling looked after and cared for, you are only going to go back so many times. And it's that experience as a whole.
Exactly. You don't want to be afraid as a patient to speak up when something goes wrong, because I've seen it. I've seen what happens to patients who have seen very well-renowned practitioners and have spoken up when they weren't too happy about something. And those practitioners have almost gaslighted these patients and say, no, it's fine. It looks absolutely fine. And they will not admit when they've done something wrong. Their ego is too big to admit, yes, this is not so good. This patient has paid for a service. They've usually paid quite a lot of money for something. And you need to be humble enough to appreciate that, yes, sometimes things don't go right. And you need to be able to rectify that so that at the end of the day, your patients are happy. Because happy patients will then spread that happiness and tell other people about their experiences. Patients that I find to be a lot more neurotic and are less accepting of, firstly, downtime, and they're less accepting of the fact that, yes, there is a process to this, that you do have to wait. The number of patients that I've had that have messaged me the next day wanting to dissolve because they're swollen, and you've signed up to this knowing that there is downtime. And patients who are not aware that, yes, sometimes things do need to be tweaked, adjusted. Things are very rarely completely perfect from the get-go. If they are, that's great. But if they're not, that's also fine. That's fine. Sometimes these things do need to be adjusted, corrected. And generally, what I do see that some people, these younger patients, are much more sort of perfectionists. They've been analyzing their faces in minute detail. And that's because of this sort of selfie society that we're living in, where people are taking hundreds of photos of themselves. They're zooming in, they're looking at details, they're editing, they're airbrushing, so they can see details that to the outside world, we don't see these things. So they'll tell me, oh, I've got this tiny little, like, that's not really a big deal, right? This is not going to add much value to your face to even correct. So it is difficult. And I found myself over the past few years having to sort of pick up red flags. And I think that a lot of patients, when they come to meet me and they have a consultation, of course, they're determining whether or not I'm the right practitioner for them. But likewise, I'm now determining if they're the right patient for me. So I'm in a position where I can now refuse to treat certain people. And it's difficult to do that, right? It's difficult to say to someone, I don't think that you're the right person for me. And nothing to do with the treatment, nothing to do whether or not they're a candidate, just based on their personality. And that's difficult. But there are people who clearly have some mental issues that they have to work through before they can have aesthetic treatment. Because a lot of people are thinking that aesthetic treatment is going to fill a void that really is more mental, that even if they have treatment, they're still going to view themselves in that exact same way. And in fact, a lot of the time, they'll view your work negatively, even when there's nothing wrong with it. So I think it is difficult. It's a minefield trying to assess who's the right person for you. But I'm finding myself more and more not treating people just based on the way that they're presenting themselves to me. Because ultimately, I don't want to do something that someone will then obsess over. I equally don't want someone who's going to cause stress for myself. I don't want a stressful life, and it's not worth it for me. I'm not just treating people to earn money. I genuinely want to make people happy. And if I think that me treating them could potentially make them unhappy, it's not worth it for me, right? I'm not just doing things for the sake of it. I genuinely want all my patients to be happy. But there's a lot of people in society now that are really critical of themselves, really critical. You hear it, the way they talk about themselves. I see these younger patients who are beautiful, and yet they're speaking about themselves. I'm like, what is going on? Like, how are they viewing themselves like this? So I say to these people, I really think you need to not do anything for at least, you know, a few years. Don't do anything. Accept who you are. If you jump to try to correct every minor detail about yourself, you will constantly be in this vicious cycle of never being happy. Never. You need to accept who you are. And I think we're quite lucky, right? Because we're not from that generation, that sort of Instagram generation. When I was younger, if all the things I didn't like about myself, if I could so readily fix it, if I could go and have aesthetic treatment, go to Turkey and have a nose job, I would firstly look very different. And secondly, my self-esteem would be awful. So I had to grow up and accept myself for who I am, despite the things I didn't like. And now I'm older, I would never dream of doing the things which when I was younger, I wish I could have done, but I didn't have the funds or the means to do it. But now aesthetic treatment is so readily available, and people are just jumping to get things done to themselves when they haven't even accepted who they are. So it is really, really difficult, I'd say, for younger people.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes when you have treatments done, I find it when treating clients for permanent makeup, especially in clinic, is that I have to point out their asymmetries. Because if you don't and then you treat, it's a really horrible thing to have to do, is to look at someone and say, well, actually, you know, almost in-depth analyze their face and say, well, this is here and that's like this, because they pick up on it. But if not, without fail, you then do the work. And then they notice it and they think that it wasn't there before, but actually it was. But because they're looking at, or they're more focused on that area now, they pick up on it.
That's why pictures are paramount to the consent process, right? You need to take photos. And what I like to do is that whilst I'm doing my consent, the first thing I do when a patient walks in is that I do my photography, so that whilst I'm doing my consent, I'm actually going through the pictures with them. So rather than sort of handing them a mirror and talking about their face, I like to actually hold the image, and me and that patient will go through the image. And the thing I quite like is that on my phone, I have the pen that you can kind of draw on the image. So I will literally arrow, point out, circle the area, save that image so that I have that as part of the consent process. That patient is aware, they've been consented that they have all of these sort of asymmetries and these areas. They're aware of what makes that treatment difficult and what is going to limit the results of that treatment. And patient needs to consent to that. They need to consent that it's a journey, it's a process, and certain things are not correctable. And certain things that even if we attempt to correct it, potentially we're going to compromise other areas of the face, right? Patients are so caught up on symmetry that they lose focus of the bigger picture. And I always give an example to my patient of when I was younger. It's a silly example. When I was younger, I was tweezing my eyebrows. I remember I was like about 15. I was trying to shape my eyebrows. And I got so obsessed with trying to make them symmetric. So obsessed. And I was so close to the mirror. And I kept taking a little bit away from one side, a little bit away from the other side. And I kept going. And then finally, I was like, finally, they're symmetric. I took a step back and I realized I literally made them into a line. Thin line. That was symmetric, but they looked horrendous. I remember I gasped and I put my hands over my mouth. I said, What have I done? They looked fine. They looked absolutely fine. And I had to grow them out. And it took like months and months to get them to grow back. And it made me appreciate that symmetry is not that important. It really does not add value to the face unless this is a gross asymmetry, like a major asymmetry. People don't pick up on that. People pick up on sort of the overall sort of balance, shadows, you know, overall structure rather than tiny, minute details that even attempting to try to correct it, saying like with a lip, trying to keep working on, you're just going to end up with a very big fake looking lip that look like sausages that are now symmetric. That's not what we're after. So yeah, this is something I go over in the consent process a lot. I speak a lot to my patients before I do the treatment because I really want the patients to understand this. I really want them to consent to this. And again, it's making me aware of when I'm saying this to my patients, how do they respond to me? Are they on board with this? Are they accepting of this? Or are they, no, they're not accepting of that. And then again, suddenly I realize that patient's not for me.
Yeah. And looking at clients, the most typically beautiful clients that come in, there is character and there is quirkiness. It's not the same face. There is something about the feature that is a little bit different. And that is what makes somebody stand out. So I really agree. We don't want everybody to look the same. And taking into consideration people's features, big lips, small face might look ridiculous. Everything has to be in proportion.
Yeah, I agree. There needs to be an appreciation for ethnicity as well, because that has an influence as well. Certain features will not look as good on certain backgrounds. For instance, I would say that more exotic features can handle sort of a bigger lip. It works better on their face. Whereas I feel like in society now, there are a lot of people who are trying to have certain features which just don't match the rest of their face, particularly with lips. I don't know why there is an obsession with bigger lips. Like people think that the bigger the lip is, the more beautiful they are. It really is not the case at all. You know, they've done a study and they've shown that when someone looks at your face, the lips, so when someone looks, you should look at it the least amount of time. That if someone's looking at your lips straight away, it means that your lips are unattractive because they should not stand out. The lips should blend in with the rest of the face. The area where someone should look at the most is the eyes, not the lips. So lips should just complement your face. It should not stand out. And I think that more and more lips are standing out. When someone's look like, when I see someone with huge lips, that's the first thing I see. And you can tell straight away that the face doesn't look right anymore. They're less attractive, not more attractive. You know, it's starting to compromise other areas. You know, their chin is suddenly looking smaller. They're talking in a strange way. You know, it just does not look right. And I don't know what's happened in society where this has now become the norm, that bigger is better. It really is not.
Where does this fall on? The patient asking for the treatment or the practitioner treating the patient? Because ultimately, somebody has to put that amount of filler in, right? And what I can never understand is when the patient advises the amount of filler that they want to the practitioner, because they've heard, well, I'm opening a mill. If you don't use the mill, can you use it elsewhere in my face? So it would be great if you could help patients listening to this understand why it should be the practitioner that decides the amount.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's like going to your doctor and saying, you know, I have a chest infection. I'd like 250 milligrams of amoxicillin, please. You know, it doesn't work that way, right? Your doctor is the specialist. Your doctor has the knowledge. They know what you need. You know, you might have an idea of what you're after. And this is what I like to explain to my patients. Give me an idea of what you're trying to achieve. I'd like to know your goals. I will then explain to you the limitations of your anatomy, the limitations of capacity of what I can do. And then based on what you're trying to achieve and what I know I can do based on your anatomy, I will then advise how much thinner is required in order to achieve that result. Okay. So yes, of course, the patient is part of the process. Of course, they can tell me what they're after, but if I can't achieve that, I'm not going to even attempt to do that. Patient comes in with very, very thin lips and they'd like, for instance, 1 mil of filler to achieve a very glamorous result. If I can't do that, then I won't do that. Right? And I'll explain that to my patients. That is not achievable. That is too much based on the capacity. So I'm not doing that. I can definitely do this amount and we can do it over this number of sessions in order to achieve this result. But this is the limitations. There is a limit to what I can achieve. And I know we all have dreams and aspirations, but I'm not a magician. I can't create something that is not creatable. Some patients come in with very thin lips and they're trying to achieve lips that look like Angelina Jolie. Any attempt to do so is going to distort their anatomy. They're going to look fake. It's going to look distorted. And I will never do that. I will never, ever compromise how someone looks. And so the problem at the moment is that people think of filler as as if they're buying some bananas from the market. They just want a certain amount. They don't realize that firstly, you're paying for the knowledge and the skill of the practitioner, not just an amount. It's not so straightforward. And I do hope that there is more of a shift where patients understand that they're coming to seek the knowledge of that practitioner rather than just certain amounts. And some patients are, a lot of patients are on board with that. However, I do find that because there's so many practitioners out there and so many that do focus on just the amount and are offering sort of very cheap fillers and such a focus on packages and this package and this amount, that again, younger patients are struggling to kind of see aesthetics as sort of a skill and an area that requires knowledge and expertise rather than, I'll get 1 mil anywhere I go to, it's going to be fine. And I'm just going to get the same result wherever I go. And I actually had this issue when I was younger. So I had my lips filled when I was 21. So I was quite young before thinner was kind of quite big, before it was all over Instagram. And I remember I searched in my area, fillers near me. That's all, like lip filler near me. I didn't realize that it was a skill. I just thought anywhere I go to, it's going to be the same. Same, like almost like, oh, I'm going to just get a filling dentist near me. I thought it would be the same thing, or haircut near me. I didn't think it was something that involves skill and expertise. And I had quite a bad experience, to be honest. I remember I had a consultation with someone separate to the practitioner, like a receptionist, some sort of admin person who did the consultation for me. And again, I had no knowledge, no experience. I thought this was normal. So I had my consultation with that person, did my consent with this separate person, and then went in. And I did see a doctor, so she was a medical practitioner, but she just straight away injected me. Like there was no communication whatsoever. No even anesthetic, just went in, did it. And that was on. I was in and out in 5 minutes because I had had my consultation with this other lady. And it seemed so strange, but I had no prior knowledge. So part of me thought, okay, well, this is just how it is. And this is what I feel like these younger people, they just don't know better. They don't have that experience. They don't have anyone sort of, they're just Googling. And the results were pretty mediocre. I think I did it one other time. And then it did start to look like something's not right. It just felt like I have nice lips to start with. Why are my lips starting to look bad? Why are they starting to look quite fake, right? I'm paying for a service to enhance how I look, not make myself look worse. And then I found out that, oh, this is dissolvable. This is something you can get rid of. And I did, like, I felt like I have to get rid of this. It's starting to become noticeable. People are starting to ask me, have you had your lips filled? And that's not what I want, right? And that's kind of the same that for my patients, like, I don't want it to be noticeable that they've had treatment. I don't want that as soon as someone looks at them, they can tell something's been done. That's not how it should be. Equally though, I do want there to be a difference. There's some practitioners that offer such subtle results. I don't think the patient can even see that there's been a change. Someone's paying a lot of money. They need to see there's been a change. So it should be natural, but still noticeable. But basically, I do feel like it is tricky to navigate and trying to find a practitioner And there's so many people out there doing this. I'm so glad that I'm not young anymore, to be honest, because if I was looking to have treatment, I wouldn't know where to start. I do find that now, like I used to post a lot on Instagram, and that's where I found I got most of my patients when I was starting out. But now I very rarely post, and I use it just as kind of like a portfolio where I post, you know, some work because I'm too busy, right? I'm too busy to do that all the time. But most of my clientele comes through word of mouth now, that someone has recommended me to someone else. And I find that's the best way to get patients because that person's had a good experience. And the patient coming to see me is already reassured that, oh, my friend's done it or my sister or whoever. Like they know someone who's been treated by me. So they already almost know me slightly rather than just Instagram where so many people, so many practitioners are editing their photos.
Oh my God, I was just about to say that.
You really can't trust anything anymore.
Honestly, I look at some stuff on Instagram and when you've got a trained eye, you can see what work, you know, when I found your page, Jasmine, I knew what I was looking for and I was searching high and low and I knew, I looked at your healed results most importantly because you posted that a lot. And even when I have any type of work done, I always look for the healed results and I go onto the patient's profile if they've tagged them. I do an in-depth search, but I know what I'm looking for and I know what to expect. Whereas there is so much editing and there is so many false photos. I really believe that unless you have a trained eye to know how to look for that, then you've got no idea. And fake reviews, the amount of fake reviews, Google reviews that people have. So patients really are lost in the aesthetics world sometimes and misled, which through no fault of their own, but I guess word of mouth is the only way and seeing somebody is, it sets a realistic expectation for the patient. And it also, as you say, gives them confidence in you coming in already because they've seen that work.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a specific clinic I have in mind, which it's really shameful because it's a huge, huge clinic in London that are editing all their photos. It's so clear that it's been done. And it's a clinic that was founded based on ethics, but I don't know what's happened. But it's really shameful that a medical practitioner is editing all their photos. And it's sad for the patients because they're coming in, spending a lot of money, expecting these exceptional, unrealistic results. And surely you're setting up every patient for disappointment because they're coming in thinking they're going to have almost like a face transplant. Coming in looking like a completely different person. Every patient will be disappointed, every single patient. And patients where they don't even have the opportunity to complain or to have these results sort of rectified. And that's a case in a lot of places. I've heard of so many patients who, not just at this specific clinic, but just generally, who when they do complain, either they're ignored or they're blocked. Imagine, they're just blocked. So common. Just, I'm so shocked. For me, as soon as a patient has any sense of something that they're not happy about, I will instantly reply to that person. I will instantly arrange a face-to-face review. I will do everything in my power to correct any issue or just to make sure that patient's happy. If it's something that genuinely I can see that there's something that needs to be fixed or adjusted, I will go above and beyond to make sure that person's happy because that person trusted me with their face. That to me is a huge deal. That person trusted me with something that everyone sees. And I just think if that was me, if that was my sister, I would do everything in my power to make sure that person's happy. But more and more, like we said at the beginning, with the artistry science business, practitioners are seeing this solely as a business. Once that transaction has been made, they're done. That patient journey is over for them. But it's not. This is a process. This involves aftercare, downtime, a final result weeks, months later. In fact, even yesterday, I had a patient contact me who I treated 7 months ago, and there was an issue. There's an issue with one of her results. And I've arranged to see her. I've arranged to see her on Saturday. And again, I will do everything in my power to adjust and make sure that everything's as good as possible. So I have no issue and no shame in saying that sometimes things go wrong. Of course, like I said, it's not an exact science. But the good thing about these treatments is that they are adjustable, correctable, fixable. But a lot of practitioners won't admit that. And they just think that everything they do is perfect. And anything that doesn't go wrong, that's the patient is seeing something that isn't there. And again, that's some sort of mental manipulation where you're trying to convince someone that what they're seeing isn't real. And that to me is so unethical and so immoral.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And like anything in life, sometimes you have to hold your hands up and say, actually, could have been better. Let's make it better. And you've got that skill set, but maybe it's that they don't have the skill set. They don't see the artistry side of it. So they genuinely think, oh, no, this is okay. But whatever it is, I'm a big believer in holding your hands up and saying, oh, yeah, could have done better here. And I do get it from a practitioner side of point of view, when sometimes if you have maybe treated somebody who is suffering with a bit of body dysmorphia disorder and you didn't pick up on it in the initial consultation and later down the line, that can be tricky. But you can never block somebody and never ignore them. That is just unacceptable.
Horrendous. Yeah, agreed.
If somebody's coming to you, what questions do you want to hear them asking you to double check that you are who you say you are and you're going to do the best job for them?
I would say the questions that I would want them to ask me is my background. How long have I been doing aesthetics? Do I have insurance? What training have I done? Also, how often do I do aesthetics? There's some practitioners who have been doing aesthetics for 5 years, 10 years, but they do one day a month. For me, I may not have been doing it for a decade, but I do this 5 days a week, every day. I do this full time. So I have a lot of experience in probably a short time compared to some of these other practitioners. But I think that's really important because it sounds great to say, yeah, I've been doing this for 5 years, 10 years. If you only do this one day a month or one day a week, that's not very experienced. I'd like it if someone would ask me that. I'd like them to kind of ask me, what sort of areas do you enjoy treating? What are the areas you most treat? Because again, that gives an indication of my experience levels for each area of treatment. If a patient comes in for a specific area, they want to know how experienced I am. So yeah, that's what I would say. And it would be quite good for a patient to ask me, if there's a complication, how do I get hold of you? How easy is it for me to get hold of you? Because I think some patients, they get very focused on the results. But to be honest, I think an indication of a good practitioner is how they are in an emergency situation and how they are just when things don't go well. Because that's really what's going to show a patient how much your practitioner cares and how much they're there for you. Last thing a patient wants is when there's an issue for them to feel like they're alone and that they're Googling. That's the last thing they're going to want to do. They're just going to see horror stories. They want to feel reassurance. So I think that's a very important question.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully anybody listening to this has written all of this down so that they know, because it can be intimidating going into an aesthetic clinic, right? And anyone who is a professional in their industry, it can be intimidating to ask questions. But actually, if somebody is sitting in front of you asking them, I think, do you know what? I'm proud of them. They've really done their research. And I know that they're at the right place because I'm answering these questions. And I think if you ask questions to any professional and they cut you off or they get annoyed at you asking them, immediate red flag.
Yeah, I agree.
You should be able to ask as many questions as you like during your consultation and about their experience, skill set, insurance, you know, how many days a week they work. You know that they really care about themselves as well.
I agree. And I also think the patients that want to book in a consultation rather than sort of a treatment appointment, I really like that as well. So all of my appointments, every treatment appointment will come with a consultation on the day. So at the same time, we consult and then we do our treatment if appropriate. And if the patient's sure they want to go ahead. But I quite like it when a patient comes in for a separate consultation because it means that they're going to have time to think things through. So there are certain countries where they can't do treatment on the same day as a consultation. For instance, in Denmark, there needs to be at least 72 hours between a consultation and treatment. But obviously in the UK, we don't really have any regulation of any sort. So treatment can be done on the same day. And if that's deemed appropriate as well. But I like to have that initial sort of meeting with the patient so that we build that sort of rapport together, we build a relationship, but also then they can go home and really think things through. I think it's very easy to do something on the spur of the moment. So sometimes patients come in, they've booked in for treatment. We're talking about they may say to me, what do you think I'd benefit from? Can you do a full face analysis? So first, I like to hear what they're bothered by. What are the areas of their face that they'd like to have treatment on? And then I then go on to talk about my own analysis. And say I talk about an area that they didn't pick up on. And they're like, okay, I'll do that. I don't like doing that. So I will say to them, no, I don't feel comfortable doing something where someone's sort of on the fence, because you could very easily, as soon as we're done or when you go home, you regret having that treatment done because you weren't convinced or you weren't sure that was an area you wanted. So I prefer to focus on the areas that you discussed and that I deem is appropriate as well. And then the other areas, I'd like you to go back and think it through. And until you're 100% sure that you want to do this area, then we can go ahead. I don't like anyone doing anything that they're on the fence or they're unsure of, because that's almost like I'm pressuring someone into something and that doesn't make me feel comfortable. And I would never want to be in that position where I'm not sure about something and someone's just said something to me and I feel like, okay, I'm just going to go along with it because they told me I need it. Because I'm not that sort of person that will speak up. I'm that sort of person that I don't really like confrontation, and that if there's something, I remember like if I get a haircut and I didn't really like it, I would never say it. Like I'd be a bit embarrassed. So I know that there's people like me, they might just go ahead with something just because the person who they think is the expert has suggested it. So I won't do that to patients. I'd rather them think it through and then come back later or book in later when they have that confidence and that autonomy to go ahead with that decision.
And then you know as well that it's been really well thought through.
Then it's valid consent.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, then they might have it done and think, oh, actually, I'm really happy with these results. This area is not bothering me.
Yeah, exactly.
Having the time to think about that is really important as well. And all too often, I know I'm definitely an impulsive buyer. I'm like, I see that, I want it, I want that right now. And then afterwards, I might think, oh, didn't really need that. So taking that time just to slow it down and have a chat first is a key thing to do when you're having any type of treatment done. And consent first and consultation first makes such a big difference because you understand that patient then.
Exactly. And, you know, and this is not just like buying a bag, right? This is something we say that it doesn't last long, but it's almost permanent, I would say. I know that these fillers are meant to break down, but studies are showing that fillers lasting up to 10 years in the face, like MRIs are showing that patient had one treatment 10 years later, it's still there. So this is something that you are committing to a very long-term result. So I say to patients, if you're happy, that's an amazing investment, right? You have something that really lasts. But if you're unhappy, you're stuck with something that's going to last a very, very long time and you won't like how you look. So this is not something you do on a whim. This is something that you do when you're sure and you don't go beyond what is natural. So it's always better to be conservative with everything in aesthetics because you can always add. Very tricky to remove, very tricky to remove, or complex, or just more downtime, more sort of trauma, anxiety. You want to be sure that you're happy. And yes, maybe over time you can add to that. But again, in very small amounts so that you never have that moment where you say to yourself, I wish I didn't do this, or I looked better before. That's the last thing you want to say to yourself. You're paid to make yourself look worse. Doesn't make sense. And that's what I always say to my patients. I will not accept for you to pay me to potentially make you look worse. I only do treatments that I can almost guarantee with near certainty that I'm going to make you look better. I can't say for sure because anything could happen, but I have to be sure. I have to be almost 100% sure that you will look better than your starting point. Anything where I think potentially there's a high probability that you'll look worse, I will not do that because I won't be able to sleep at night if I'm that sort of practitioner. That just is unethical and it's almost conning patients into treatment and making people look worse.
It's also very difficult because if you've got a patient that comes to you, how do you deal with it if you can see that the work that they've had done is not good and has made them look worse, but they feel very happy about it? How do you go about that?
Yeah, so I get that a lot. I get that very often. And I'll say to them, these are the things that I can see. This is not ideal for this area. So you have two options, really. You either dissolve and start again if there's an area that you're trying to change or you're trying to get an improvement in that area and there are these issues there. Alternatively, if you're happy, I would recommend you do nothing. But I will never, ever say, I would never advise to add to this. I would say either dissolve and start again if you are trying to correct things or change it in some sort of a way. But if they're coming to see me, clearly they want something different with this area. So either they want it changed, then I would say you need to dissolve and start again. If they want it bigger or just more enhanced, then I would say, no, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I would advise you to do nothing. If you're happy, don't add to it, because it's very easy for you to then become unhappy. We want to always get that instant gratification from fillers where you get, you do it, you feel fabulous straight away, but you can't make something perfect more perfect. You can't make something good even better, in my opinion. I think it's better to just quit whilst you're ahead. And if I think that this is something that doesn't look good, I'm not going to force you to do anything about it. It's your face. But I don't want to then be associated with that work. If I'm the last person who treated you, even if, say, for instance, it was pretty awful before, when someone asks, where did you get this done? They'll say me, because I was the last person that treated them. And if it doesn't look good, that's bad advertisement. That person that they've told I treated them probably won't come to me, because they'll think that this is the sort of work that I deem as looking good. So at the end of my treatment, I have to look at the result and I have to like what I see. If I don't like what I see, then that's unethical. So it's easier to just say to someone, just don't do anything. Don't waste your money. So that's it. I don't want you to waste your money and look bad. If you're happy, don't do anything. And I'll refund them their deposit. So someone has paid a deposit to see me. I don't want to then say to them, no, I'm not treating you and I'm keeping your deposit. I mean, that's really bad. Like, it's kicking someone whilst they're down. So I'll be like, no, I'm going to refund your deposit and just leave things as they are. If you're happy, just don't do more. Or if you do want more, then I'm not going to be that person to do it. And unfortunately, there are plenty of people out there who will do that. And that's the shame. I'll say that I won't treat you, and I'm almost sure they're just going to go to someone else who will. Because there's a lot of people out there who'll do that.
And now, what about brands? So when a patient comes to you, or if, let's say, a patient is listening to this and they live abroad, so they're not going to be able to come for an appointment, what brand should they be looking for? And does it make a difference? Is all filler just hyaluronic acid, or is there particular makes of it that you think are better that they need to be looking for?
So all fillers are made of hyaluronic acid, okay? But there are different levels of purification when a filler is made. Okay, so there are generally three grades of purification in the laboratory testing and the laboratory process when a filler is made. So the lowest grade of purification will be the hyaluronic acid you find in skincare. So it's at a level that can be just placed topically on the skin, but can't be injected. Okay, second grade is a bit more purified, and this can then be injected in the skin, but all the sort of impurities haven't fully been removed. So these are the fillers that could potentially lead to reactions later down the line, where people end up with sort of a few months later, they have like sort of lumps or things that where straight away their body can react to the filler. So these are kind of what I would call sort of like the cheap fillers. Okay. And then there's the highest level of purification. These are the fillers which are what I would call sort of premium brand fillers. So they've been purified to the highest levels, which also requires, there's a lot more cost involved to this sort of purification. So a company has to spend a lot on getting the filler as pure as possible so that the filler integrates really well into the tissues. It leads to very low levels of complication rates. And this then is the premium brand fillers. And the fillers where you see there's a stark difference in cost, right? So you'll see that some fillers, people can get this done for sort of £100 or £80. And then you see some practitioners who are charging upwards of £400-£500. And that's not just down to the skill and the expertise of your practitioner. It's also the filler itself is a lot more expensive for the practitioner to purchase. So there are differences in fillers. There are fillers which have CE marking. So the EU rating is what we would call CE marking. And in America, there's FDA rating. And then there are also black market fillers that haven't gone through this testing. So I would definitely recommend patients and clients to research on the filler that is being used. And again, it's very hard because there's hundreds out there. But there are a bunch of sort of premium brands. And these are, I just need to disclose, I am an ambassador for a company. So I represent Stellage. So that's the brand that I use personally. And this is a premium brand, but there are others out there. For instance, Juvederm, Teoxane, Benatera, Restylane, and obviously it's Stellage. So these are what I would call sort of the premium brand thinners. But then there are a bunch which aren't so premium. And then there's the black market thinners as well, where you don't even know what's being injected. So I would definitely recommend that patients find out what the thinner is being used and do some of your own research. Find out about the testing. Find out about, are they at least CE marked? And ask about whether or not that practitioner has had issues relating to the filler. I can happily say I've never had a single issue relating to the filler that I use. I've never had anyone have an inflammatory reaction later down the line, which is common with some brands of fillers.
And that's really important as well to for them to be able to understand that. It's sometimes I think with aesthetics, you might see the price of things and think, if you don't understand the process that these products have to go through to get the reputation and the quality of ingredients, you might just think, oh, filler's a filler or a skin serum is a skin serum. But actually, there are so many different levels and different qualities that it's really important that we educate our patients about this so they can really understand as much as they can. So, Jasmine, I'm going to do some very quick fire questions with you. So how will fillers help?
So dermal fillers will help to treat an area which potentially a patient feels needs correcting. I think that they help significantly with harmonizing a face, but more than anything, they improve a patient's self-esteem. So that's why people are seeking treatment. There's an area that they don't feel so confident about, and having this treatment will make them feel more comfortable in their own skin and will make them sort of present themselves to the world in a more confident way.
How long do fillers last? I know you said before onwards up to 10 years, possibly they're seeing results. What would be your annual, or is there an annual way to treat? How much time?
So it's difficult to say for sure, but what I tend to say to patients is that you might have remnants of filler lasting years and years. But in terms of the results, you can imagine that that's not going to last for that full length of time. So we say to patients on average, like 9 to 12 months before you'd want to redo it. But what I find is areas of the face which move more, for instance, the lips, the nasolabial folds, that will break down faster compared to areas that don't move so much, such as the nose or the under eyes. These are areas that are quite static, so it lasts longer generally. However, also on top of that, the more filler you do in an area, it tends to last longer and longer. So you may find when you do lip filler, you want to redo it from sort of 6 to 12 months. When you do it again, you might find that's now 12 to 18 months. You do it a third time, it's lasting even longer to the point where you don't even feel like you need to redo it.
Brilliant. Now, are they painful? Thinking of whenever I come to you and you're like, do you have something cream? I'm like, no, just go.
It depends on the area. So if you're not having sort of a dental block, then yes, there is pain, but it's very tolerable. What I'd say is every area of treatment generally doesn't take longer than I would say 15 minutes to do. So even say, for instance, lips, I say on average, it takes me between 5 to 8 minutes to do. So it's a relatively quick procedure. Most of the thinners have anesthetic in it. So as you're working, it gets more and more comfortable. I'm not going to lie and say it's a painless procedure. It is not painless, but it's tolerable. So I've never had anyone who stopped and said, I can't continue. So it's very tolerable. And I feel like when you know that you're going to get something very good at the end of that, it's even more tolerable, right? So when you go to the dentist and you have even the smallest amount of pain, it's like unbearable. I can't handle it, because you don't really think that, oh, I'm going to get something really nice at the end. Whereas with this, I think patients are a lot more motivated to sort of bear that slight discomfort. And again, it's something, like I said, it doesn't take that long to do. So if it was agony for sort of an hour, then that would not be tolerable. And I think that, yes, that would require like an anesthetic, injectable anesthetic, local anesthetic, so that it is comfortable. But it's relatively bearable, I would say. On average, I'd say anywhere from sort of 3 to 6 on the pain scale, which is, I think, bearable. You're different though, Ella. I think that your pain threshold is something I have not seen very often.
I'm like, it's worth it. It's more of a patience threshold than a pain threshold. Because I'm like, just get it done, over. The quicker it started, the quicker it's finished. Okay, so, and then downtime. What is a realistic downtime for patients to expect?
Okay, so again, this varies, but I would say generally the worst of the swelling is that day and the day after. So I'd say 48 hours. That's the sort of time frame you don't really want to see anyone or have anything important happening. You can, of course, see people, but that's the time when people will notice you've had something done, particularly if we're talking about lips. Bruising obviously will vary amongst everyone, but the day after the procedure, you can cover with makeup. Okay, so this is what I would say, that most people will find that first 48 hours. After 48 hours, you'll still be swollen, but it won't be very dramatic. It's just those first 48 hours that can be. This, of course, like everything varies. There are some people that, you know, within a few hours look acceptable. There are other people that the swelling lingers a bit longer, that sort of initial dramatic swelling. But I'd say 48 hours. That's why my Fridays are very popular, because people find that then they have the weekend to recover.
Brilliant. Jasmine, you have been amazing. I've got one last question for you, please. And that is, please, can you give me your opinion on what you think the next best thing in aesthetics is going to be and which direction you think the industry is moving?
I would say filler under ultrasound guidance is the next sort of phase in aesthetics. So this is where ultrasound is being used to map the arteries of the face and just to actually see the muscles and the fat compartments. At the moment, with most practitioners, when we treat patients, we obviously have an idea, a knowledge of where normal anatomy is. But with everyone, there are variations, right? And we're almost injecting blindly, right? So we don't see physically where the arteries and vessels of the face are. So I think ultrasound, where we can actually map individual variations of anatomy, will be the next stage of, and it just will make aesthetics a lot safer.
Excellent. Jasmine, I am so excited to get this podcast. I honestly could talk to you for another 5 hours.
I feel like that's great.
This is long enough, but I've got somebody waiting for me back at the clinic.
Oh, bless you. Sorry.
I'm like, I'm just going to do this. But honestly, I feel like we might have to do a part two, because you're so knowledgeable. And this is exactly what people are going to want to hear, is this information from an absolute expert in their field. So now it's going to educate anyone listening to this. Right, now I know what I need to ask. And I mean, if you could please tell any patients where to find you, how to get in contact if they want to come see you, if they've got any questions.
So you can find me on my website, which is drjasmine.co.uk, or you can message me on Instagram. My handle is dr.jasmine.aesthetics, and you can text or call, whichever way you prefer. I'm very readily available to answer any questions.
Brilliant. Well, let's hope that you've got enough time to come back for a part two at some point. Dolls, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Fresh Not False. And please remember to subscribe and review. You can also follow my Instagram page for more information on the world of aesthetics. It's at Ella Harvey Skin and Beauty. If you've got any burning questions about anything we've discussed, please do send me a WhatsApp on 07592 170 688, and I will do my best to answer you in future episodes. Bye, dolls.